Stan McCauley, good morning to you.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
Great. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
I'm glad you're here with us.
I'm glad to be there with you.
Well, you are at least in audio. So it's a big day for you. So the fact that you've taken out some of time for us this morning really means a lot to us.
Well, I mean, you know, living legend Brad Davis,
exactly.
Believe it or not, but the very first political interview I had, it was back in 2007.
Wow. That, look at you, he even remembered that, Brad.
I do.
Yeah, he remembers it, too.
I do.
Look at that. That's fantastic.
Brad remembers everything.
Yes, he does. He does. He remembers the
Glad that you're here and taking a shot.
Yeah, so you must not have gotten any sleep last night, huh?
Oh, I got a little bit of sleep. You know, this is the third time I've done this, so it hasn't become old hat. The thing that's exciting about this time, of course, is this is a lot more than a perfunctory campaign, and we've got a strategy that we believe can defeat $1.2 million. So, you know, we're very excited about it, and we're moving forward.
Well, you know what they say, right? Three times is a charm.
So three times is a charm and three strikes you're out.
Well, three strikes you're out. Come on, Sam. We're not being negative this morning. We're trying to be positive here. Trying to help you out, brother. Come on.
Real being real and truthful is a lot better than being positive, because nothing defeats the truth of a thing.
All right. So, look, we all know. I mean, Luke Broden's going to be a tough battle. We all know that. But you feel you got a shot. What separates the two of you?
Well, what separates us is, you know, we're very intentional on focusing on the neighborhoods and the community. But more than that, I consider myself a constituent representative, as I like to tell people. It's not the Republicans' government. It's not the Democrats' government or the Green Party or the Working Family Party's government. It's your government. It's the people's government.
That's a good
point. It's your listeners' government.
That's a very good point.
And we need to have representation. It doesn't forget about the constituent. 25 minutes after the election.
That's a great point. I really hand it to you there, Stan. Go ahead, Brad.
Say, as you look at what has gone on in Hartford recently, wouldn't you say that it's a lot better than it used to be?
Well, it is better than it used to be. It cost Pedro Segarra his administration. A lot of the stuff that's going on has been in play for a long time. Albany Avenue. In 2007, I remember videotaping meetings about what's actually unfolding now. I've taped meetings for the last 37 years in the city. And I've taped the Weaver meetings. I've taped the MLK meetings. And so all that's going on is in play. And while any administrator that is currently in office gets credit for the things that are going on that are great, they seldom want to take blame for the things that are going on that are bad. And, you know, downtown is fabulous. It should be going along fabulous. But Hartford is more than its downtown. It's its neighborhoods. And for decades and for, you know, successive administrations, the neighborhoods have not been doing as good as they should be, because, you know, the solutions that Hartford residents have seem to take a back seat to whatever the intentions are or the plans. And so, you know, Hartford's people wind up being like, you know, individuals waiting to be colonized. And so, yeah, Hartford's doing good downtown. I was a vocal proponent of the stadium. The current mayor was not. So, you know, it's interesting to hear him take credit for the things he was against and didn't do.
Oh, maybe he wasn't because it wasn't, you know, he knows it's not profitable.
It isn't profitable, but it's part of an overall strategic initiative to move downtown forward by making Hartford a destination city, which is still in play. If it was me, I would have done the financing a little bit differently than they did. I would have, you know, first and foremost tried to put a bond package together that gave first option to the constituents to buy in. I mean, what better place to get your money than the residents of Hartford that might have put up the money and then being able to reap the profits thereof. It's going to be creative ideas and creative of thinking that's going to help Hartford forward as we are stuck in the middle of this financial moray.
How do we get Hartford to be more solvent?
Hartford solvency is going to have to come first and foremost by Hartford taking responsibility for its own financial situation.
Well, there's a couple of things come to mind. There's a lot of property that's not taxable. Okay, it falls under the pilot program, meaning payment in lieu of taxes. In which case, that money has not increased. It's been pretty stagnant for several years. The other thing that comes to mind is that there are a lot of taxpayers who just, quite frankly, don't pay their taxes. And how do we get them to? How do we solve the fiscal crisis that Hartford has been in for quite some time and bring it once again to its days of prosperity of yesteryear?
Well, first, there has to be an intention to make Hartford a place that can become prosperous. There are structural anomalies in, I'll put it that way, there's structural anomalies in how Hartford is resourced in terms of being financed. You talked about all of the non-profit or non-taxable properties, most of which are owned by the state. I mean, if one's going to make the case for Hartford to be solvent, I don't think the best way to do it is to make the other 168 towns responsible for bailing us out.
I think
what you do is, I'm going to say the bankruptcy word, which a lot of people don't like.
No, but it worked for Detroit. It worked for Detroit. Look at Detroit right now.
If Hartford had filed for bankruptcy, we'd be talking something totally different, because the number one debtor to the city of Hartford is the state of Connecticut. Okay, the $550 million in back lieu, payment in lieu of taxes, the rear reach of that was $550 million.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't consider bailing out someone with money that you owe them a favor. Hartford is now in financial receivership. For the next 20 years, if the political winds stay the same and the legislature continues to bail us out. So we're going to have some creative thinking. One thing I will say is this. Hartford, the entire city is redlined for all intents and purposes.
Uh-huh.
With the exception of 06103, which is downtown, which means that the property values in Hartford are depressed. So if you take an average of just, and I'm going to be very, very, very conservative with these numbers, if you take an average of 25,000 dwellings in Hartford and you average them out to be $100,000 less what they would be worth if they were in West Hartford or Avon or Newington, that right there is $2.5 billion automatic increase to the brand list without doing anything but bringing up the property values by diminishing or getting rid of the redlining that Hartford is in. So there are structural things that keep Hartford where it is. And I think we need to have a broader conversation. Do we want Hartford to be unlocked from that kind of deficit mindset and to move forward? I think that can be done if you have the right leadership with the right city. We're going to be responsible for moving the city forward and creative in ways of creating local economies to pull people out of the economic despair that they're in.
All right, Stan, I'm looking at your priorities, public safety, quality of life, economic and community development, mission-driven collaborations, working outside of our silos, communications, of course, which is huge, and number one is education and youth development, and that it says here that I believe that education can be transformative and that it can be transformed to meet the needs of every child in our city. Yet, we look at the test scores in inner city of Hartford, and they seem to be lagging. What can we do? And that's unfortunate. We want everybody to have a fair and equal education across every town, every city in the state of Connecticut. And I don't think anybody would disagree with that. So how do we get the test scores in city up?
Well, we get the test scores up by making sure that the people that we pay close to $500 million every year do their job. I'm old school. I know there's a union, and I know the union's sworn sovereign purpose in life is to protect the teachers. But I'm not the guy that protects teachers who don't do their job. We have kids literally in war-torn countries who attend school every day and learn. It is unconscionable that we have urban areas where kids go and leave without acquiring an education and graduate from the 12th grade on a third grade reading level. That is unconscionable. If cars came off the assembly line with that attitude, they'd break down before they were delivered to the dealership. So we need to start holding people accountable in all sectors. And to that end, I will appoint people to serve on the Board of Education, as the charter allows me to do, that will set the policies, that will hold people accountable for delivery. And then we have to have a different attitude and change the culture of the schools that make it some place that kids want to come to and want to learn. And we have methodologies and ways to do that we just don't have time to talk about on the program this morning.
No, I've only got about 2 minutes left. All right, so you're a Democrat and you're endorsed by the Republican Party. Quite a feat, if you ask me. How did this come about? And is that you think that's an asset? Should you become the mayor of the city of Hartford, that you are able to work with people across party lines? Let's talk about how this came about.
Well, it came about because the Republicans in Hartford,
there's like three, right?
Saw something in my plan and in my campaign that they thought was worthy of being, endorsed and making sure that I got on the ballot. We were going to petition our way on, but they saw something they liked. So I do work across party lines. I treat everybody as a constituent.
That's good.
Because that's what everyone is. They own the government. I'm applying to work for them.
Go ahead, Brad.
But don't you look at right now what has been done, and it hasn't been a long time in doing it either. But isn't there hope? Hasn't there been hope established, wouldn't you say, by the leader right now?
I think the leader has aptly and skillfully projected hope. Mm-hmm. But that hope is not felt within the city. There are two Hartfords, I would contend perhaps even three.
Okay.
Now, for the general consumption, there seems hope, but outside of the urban core of Hartford, outside of 06103 and outside of downtown, the other 16 neighborhoods make up the city, there is just sort of mutinous attitude with the crew.
You were once a supporter of Luke Bronin, though, right?
I beg your pardon?
Were you once a supporter of Luke Bronin?
No, that's been said, but on election day 4 years ago, I was holding the Pedro Segatta sign.
Okay.
I thought that I am disappointed that Luke Bronin did not bring the acumen that he should have brought, being a Rhodes Scholar and a Yale graduate. The Rhodes system teaches people how to run countries. I find it disturbing that Hartford is in the condition that it's in. We're in the middle of a gang war. It's not been talked about in the press.
You're right.
Police department that is in total chaos and with depressed morale.
But he's a cheerleader. He's not going to talk about the dent on the fender on the other side of the car. He's going to talk about the shiny part. Stan, I got
to
let you go. We're up against a break. But I got to tell you something. I really appreciate your time with us this morning, and I wish you nothing but success tonight.